Subheading. They will scheme out schemes against him. After the Civil War, the United States quickly emerged as the greatest industrial power on Earth. It soon became clear to the leading oligarchic circles in London and Europe that the formal British Empire had reached its zenith under Queen Victoria and was surely doomed to fade into irrelevancy during the new 20th century, unless something was done. And most alarming to colonialists and imperialists, other nations were keen to emulate the American model of development. In his book, The Anglo-American Establishment, historian Carol Quigley writes in considerable detail describing how numerous overlapping secret societies and roundtable discussion groups were formed in Britain during the decades immediately preceding World War I, primarily for the purpose of subverting the United States back under the control of the British Empire. One such group was the Fabian Society, which was established in the late 1800s and had adopted the long-range goal of conditioning the world to accept socialism. Later, the Royal Institute for International Affairs was established in 1919, also known as Chatham House, for the purpose of promoting Anglo-American relations. The ultra-wealthy diamond magnate Cecil Rhodes, after whom the African country of Rhodesia was named, now Zimbabwe, along with H.G. Wells, Bertrand Russell, and Lord Alfred Milner, among others, appear to have been the primary architects of this still-unfolding subversive plot to reinvent the British Empire as a world government. An excerpt from a book published by Carol White in 1980 describes how, prior to World War I, the conspiring imperialists discussed how best to go about capturing the United States so that it might serve as London's dumb giant, fighting their wars and paying their bills. As far as conspiracies go, it is the scheme of all schemes, intending to destroy the American system of economy throughout the planet and establish a new Anglo-world empire, a new world order, as it is commonly referred to today. In order to accomplish their open conspiracy, as H.G. Wells called it, the conspirators recognized that first they had to throttle the American engine of production by controlling credit, which meant destroying the national banking system within the United States. Edward Griffin documents in great detail in his book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, how in 1913, through their American agents such as Paul Warburg, J.P. Morgan, and others, the old money banking cartel centered in London succeeded in foisting the privately owned Federal Reserve Bank upon the United States. This resulted in delivering the economic sovereignty of the United States into the hands of an exclusive clique of private bankers whose own aims were diametrically opposed to that of the people of the United States. Such an act was blatantly unconstitutional and is exactly what the American founders tried to prevent. But the scheme was so successful that to this day, most Americans assume that the government of the United States owns the Federal Reserve. It does not. While the Federal Reserve is governed by a board of federally approved governors, Edward Griffin points out in his book that that is merely window dressing to give the appearance that the Federal Reserve is a government institution. Jehovah's matchless foresight certainly seems to have described the ongoing conspiracy when centuries ago he inspired the prophet to write, "And they will scheme out against him schemes." The second aspect of the scheme of the empire of the financiers involved fomenting a war on the continent of Europe. The original inventors of the United States of America realized the importance of keeping free from foreign entanglements and wars. To that end, in 1823, President James Monroe articulated the foreign policy of the United States and what has become known as the Monroe Doctrine. Essentially, the doctrine states that the United States will not become involved in the foreign affairs of Europe and that the European colonial power should not meddle in the affairs of the Americas. In the run-up to the First World War, the United States continued to maintain its neutrality toward the European powers, even as war erupted in Europe, due mainly to the many entangled alliances of the European nations. The United States continued to remain neutral. For example, on August 19, 1914, President Woodrow Wilson addressed the United States Congress saying, quote, "Every man who really loves America will act and speak in the true spirit of neutrality, which is the spirit of impartiality and fairness and friendliness to all concerned." However, the sinking of the British-flagged Lusitania by German U-boats, which resulted in the deaths of some 120 Americans, eventually drew the United States into the First World War in 1917 on the side of the British and French. To this day, though, the controversy continues as to whether the British baited the Germans into torpedoing the Lusitania by letting it be known that the passenger vessel was secretly shipping munitions from New York to Great Britain. The Lusitania supposedly even slowed down to linger in U-boat-infested waters off the coast of Ireland. Whether that particular Lusitanian conspiracy theory is true or not does not matter. What is historically significant is the fact that the anti-German propaganda eventually swayed American opinion in favor of the British. Woodrow Wilson's closest confidant and advisor, Colonel Edwin Mandell House, often referred to as Wilson's alter ego, was in fact an Anglophile, if not an outright British agent, and one who was most responsible for steering the United States into the First World War. House was also apparently influential in the establishment of the Federal Reserve Bank, as well as being instrumental in the creation of the Council on Foreign Relations in 1919, which is the American counterpart of London's Royal Institute for International Affairs. Both organizations are dedicated to the establishment of an Anglo-American-controlled empire and the destruction of the nation-state system. As Woodrow Wilson's chief advisor, Edwin House is credited as the American architect of the League of Nations as well. Even though the entry of the United States into the Great War quickly tipped the balance of power in favor of the so-called Allies, America merely served as London's dumb giant, and afterward found itself saddled with a foreign-owned central bank and national policies increasingly under the influence of British imperialists. After a century of struggle against the geopolitical machinations of London, the events of the First World War successfully manipulated America into becoming the closest ally of its former colonial master, and London's imperial interests were served by having their continental imperial rivals crushed. So, in this way, the American King of the South was lured into a ruinous course by traitors loyal to the crown, so that the scripture was fulfilled that foretold, "And the very ones eating his delicacies will bring his downfall." On June 28, 1919, the victorious Allies sat together at the peace table and forced Germany to accept the terms of the Treaty of Versailles. The signatories of the treaty pretended they were intent on peace. That was a lie. Historians are in agreement that the victors' terms of the treaty were so egregious and punitive, particularly as regards the vengefully exorbitant war reparations imposed on Germany, that in reality, the peace treaty of Versailles made the rise of Nazism and the Second World War virtually inevitable. In this way, Daniel 11:27 was fulfilled. And as regards these two kings, their heart will be inclined to doing what is bad, and at one table a lie is what they will keep speaking. But nothing will succeed, because the end is yet for the time appointed. While the empire was successful in capturing their dumb giant, they were not immediately successful in creating an Anglo-controlled superstate, which is what some intended the League of Nations to eventually become. In spite of being hailed as the political expression of God's kingdom on earth by certain clergymen of that day, the United States Senate refused to even ratify the treaty, citing doing so as a violation of the Monroe Doctrine. Prophetic destiny would not permit the King of the North to achieve his coveted goal of uncontested world government until the appointed time of the end. In the meanwhile, 11 years after the end of the Great War, the King of the North used his newfound power over the financial affairs of the King of the South to further bring his breakdown by pulling the plug on the American economy. In his book, Against Oligarchy, historian Webster Tarpley painstakingly documented how London created the Great Depression. End of part 1.